This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency, with information for IT professionals. For more information, advertising opportunities, and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 32 with Mark Giles, and is brought to you by the Computer Information Agency. Visit us on the web at www.ciaops.com. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined across the Skype by Mark Giles. Mark, how's it going?
Yeah, not too bad, Robert. How are things with you?
Excellent. Nice and quiet for a change. We can schedule some time to do a podcast. Always very hectic at this time of the year. I don't know what it's like for you, but I would suggest that it's pretty busy as customers need everything at the last minute to claim in this tax year.
Yeah, I think we've had a quiet few days, quieter than I expected it to be, really. I think most of our clients are well planned now. We try and train them to make sure they get things in well in advance and don't spring surprises on us where possible. So, yeah, it's worked quite well this year.
Oh, that's good. I mean, like I said, it's always handy to be able to do that. But, you know, again, unfortunately, I think that not all clients are probably as well trained as your ones. And there are a lot of people running around trying to get things done at the last minute, so...
Yeah, well, it doesn't happen that way every year, I can guarantee that.
Oh, well, like I said, enjoy it while you can. Yeah. You must be going on holidays, are you?
Oh, yes, I am on Monday night, actually, yes, driving up to Queensland. There you go.
There you go, solve that problem. Anyway, before we get too casual about all this, we probably need to introduce Mark to all the listeners. So what I'll do, Mark, as we do on all the podcasts, is just throw over to you and get you to give the audience a bit of an idea of who you are, what your business is, and where you've come from.
Yep. Okay. Okay. My name is Mark Giles. I run a small managed IT services company called Frixus Technologies, based just in the north of Sydney near Hornsby. The business has been in operation for over 13 years now, and I've been in the country for 14 years, originally from the UK, 6 years in the Royal Navy, and worked for a company called Virtuality with the virtual reality head mount displays, and decided to come to Australia. And I haven't looked back since, of course. The business started within a year of me arriving in Australia. Thanks to the lucky gambling Australians, I won a Keno contract supplying supplying PCs, display systems. And that pretty much launched the business, as in it had a bit of cash flow behind it. And then I got kind of more sucked into doing IT support, I suppose it was, because it wasn't my chosen direction at that time. I did think that virtual reality was going to take off, and that was where I really wanted to drive it. But, that all fell by the wayside and got more and more involved in IT support. And hence we started the business off, and it was really, obviously, initially, like most companies, a small break-fix company, although we did try and make sure that we, I guess it was one of the early adopters of managed services in the fact that we had scheduled maintenance visits. So I guess that was always in the back of my mind to try and prepare for these sort of things. And then 5 to 6 years ago, we went down the MSP path, and we have 100% client base of managed services now. And I guess the revenue for the guaranteed income is close to $500,000 a year now. And there's myself and four other staff, and one of those is part-time. So that's where we are basically right now. There have been lots of up and downs in those years, lots of money spent, wasted, well used, and... lots of networking involved, and it's been a fun ride so far, and there's a long way to go yet.
Well, I think, I think in some respects that your story will resonate with a lot of listeners, in that they are obviously in the IT industry, probably they're looking at or are involved in the MSP model. So again, it's perhaps a well-worn track, but what I've asked Mark to come on the podcast to discuss with us is some of the marketing initiatives that he's tried over the years. Now, we've both spent some time talking to each other and updating each other on, some of the things that we've tried, what's worked, what hasn't worked. So What we thought would be a good idea is obviously to share some of that experience with people out there, because I suppose at the moment times are a bit tougher than a few years ago, and I think that any benefit people can get on, you know, some shortcuts or some tips and tricks, or you know, what actually works out there in the marketplace would be a great benefit. So I think what I'll do is to get Mark to kick off, get us started, is that obviously there was a point in time way back when you're an IT person, you do IT well, you know, and maybe it's not paying the bills, or maybe you're not getting the revenue in. You look around and think, well, I need to do some more marketing. I need to sell my business. I need to brand my business. Did you come to that sort of point at some time in the past?
Yeah, I guess we wanted to expand the business, certainly when you start taking your first staff on. You know, you've got to guarantee that their salaries get paid before yours. And that certainly puts a huge amounts of pressure on the new business owner, certainly if he's not been involved in the sort of area before, which I hadn't. Thankfully, we've got, you know, 13 years now. And the way the business has spread, again, with most of MSPs and IT companies, has been word of mouth referral. So we've really relied on our clients to drip feed us new business. And while that is obviously a great benefit, because if you're going to do a good job, then you're naturally going to get referred anyway. But there's also, you know, you can incentivize your clients and your staff, for that matter, to you know, make sure that they promote your business more as well. But certainly the amount of marketing and advertising that we have done is consistently inconsistent, I would say. And that's probably one of our biggest problems, or the biggest errors that ourselves and most people make. You start something and then you stop it after, you know, 2 or 3 months because it's not worked in your eyes, and sometimes it hasn't worked and sometimes it does work. So the consistency is the key to it. But then you need to make sure that you have the budgets in place to make sure that the affordability is there as well. Now, thankfully, we do have quite a good budgeting system. We've got not bad targets, I suppose. We generally don't hit our sales targets every quarter of the year. Maybe one or two quarters in the year we hit our sales targets. You can't make them too easy, of course. So we've probably got about 7 or 8 regular amounts of marketing and advertising we perform, some that has dropped off and some that we're going to revisit again, and some that we are more consistently good at doing than others.
So is it fair to say now that you have a marketing, sales, you know, promotion budget where perhaps you didn't have that before?
Absolutely, yeah. You can't just suddenly think of a marketing plan without having some costs involved and have that marketing budget for the entire year.
Now, is that budget figure a percentage of, say, turnover, or is it a set, you know, dollar amount?
I guess we have not set it as a percentage. I know a lot of people do. We set it as a, you know, probably, you know, $20,000 per year, or a $5,000 per activity sort of thing. I mean, right now we've revisited the newspaper advertising, which is running fortnightly at the moment in the Hornsby Advocate, so the Cumberland newspapers. And we started this mainly probably about three and a half years ago, where we started getting more aggressive with this form of advertising. We'd always done the car signage before, which does work to a fashion. It certainly gets your vehicles noticed and gives you more brand awareness than referrals. I think I do remember only one major client that we did receive, and that was because he saw the car driving up the F3, so he just made a note of the website and the phone number. So it certainly works. Every form of advertising and marketing should certainly work. If you're consistent, then obviously I mentioned that message of consistency earlier, then it obviously makes it a lot better and a lot easier to track the results as well.
So I suppose another question starting out is, you know, way back when you did start doing it, was it just a matter of we need to throw money at this, or what, did you have a logical, you know, plan, strategy, follow-up, measuring, operation in place, or did you just say, oh, you know, we'll throw an ad here or we'll do this here without much thinking of, you know, actually getting results?
Well, I think before we really had that guaranteed income from the managed services model, then it was really up and down with the cash flow. and it was very much more difficult to budget things like this in, because you know, you very often think, you know, the primary things are paying your bills and paying your staff, and you think, you know, spending money on advertising generally falls by the wayside. But if you've got that guaranteed income and the cash flow is pretty smooth and steady, then you can easily get that marketing budget sorted out. So, like I say, we've been managed services for 5 years now, and like every single client, we don't do any ad hoc support at all. So, you know, we 3.5 to 4 years ago, we started looking at the budgets, and we spent, I think it's $18,000 on the initial campaign on the newspaper advertising, and that was in the North Shore of Sydney, the Cumberland newspapers. So we did fortnightly adverts in three publications, and it was a quarter page ad in each one. So it certainly added up to $18,000 very, very quickly. And so the North Shore Times, the Hornsby Advocate, and the Parramatta Advertiser. Now, there was quite a few that we obviously went to many clients that were interested, that did respond to the ad. The only one that did generate income and clients, certainly two clients that we still have, was the Hornsby Advocate. So out of that $18,000 advertising campaign, we picked up two clients, and in those 3 and a bit years, they've spent $120,000 with us. So $18,000 into $120,000 revenue has to have classified as a successful campaign.
But obviously that you've gone the managed services route, and you're not doing, you know, the break fix stuff. When you do your campaigns, aren't you going to be attracting people who do just want to do break fix? I mean, is that what you see, or is your ads targeted or responded to in such a way that you do get the clients that you want? I mean, what sort of, I suppose, turn away rate do you have? Do you have, you know, a lot of people and you turn them away, obviously, because they don't meet your model, and you pick the ones? Or what's the sort of response rate like?
Yeah, the ones that respond generally have got the right message. We've been quite strict on that. We don't look after home users, and we no longer look after home businesses either. although we have got one client that did move into their home, so obviously we've kept them on. But we do refuse clients. They understand that as well. You know, we always have somebody that we can refer them to that will do a break fix. So it keeps that relationship in there, and you know, they will still, you know, refer you if they feel that you're a better fit for any of their, you know, colleagues and what they network with. So it's been a very good message. I mean, the newspaper, quarter page ad, we can put quite a lot in there anyway. But we generally do offer a free IT audit. And even the last one, which we didn't get any response on because we're back on the advertising on the newspaper, just the Hornsby Advocate this time. And that was, you know, a free managed IT services for the first month if you sign up before June the 30th. So we've still got a couple of days to go for that one. But, you know, we always offer that, you know, comprehensive IT audit. Not all clients will actually understand what one of those would be anyway. And not all of them want that kind of thing. But generally, we know SMBs very well. You know, I've got a standard template with a network diagram view, and I can almost walk into a place if they've told me they've got a server, they've got email, they've got 7 machines. You know, I've got a standard template, a Visio diagram, and I can pretty much get very accurate Visio diagram of their network even without stepping through the door.
So the network audit, obviously, when you do run it, what's the deliverable? What does the client actually get in their hands for, you know, letting you in the door, basically?
Yeah, well, they certainly do get the network diagram view, but they get a complete audit. We use Kaseya as our managed services platform. So we run the audit and the alerts on those for a month or whatever time period the client's comfortable with. Most of them are generally comfortable with that. Even I guess we did have one that didn't want remote control enabled on it, so that's not a problem. It can all be configured. So then we pull off those reports at the end of the period and give them the general Kaseya reporting reports. All their licenses are listed as well. I mean, certainly I'm sure most people that are going to be listening to this will go into a new client. They wouldn't even know where any of their installation disks are, never mind their license keys for anything. So I see a lot of this Kaseya or managed services platform licensing audit will pull out that information to the client, whether they think they need it or not, whether they will need it in the future or not. And obviously, then you've got reports such as, you know, disk usage and a lot of critical event errors such as disk hard drive failures. As we know, most of those start to give event log errors long before they really fail.
And the good old the backup's not working error that everybody seems to ignore.
Yeah, I think it's not so much of the problem nowadays is people not taking the off-site backup. I think we've got most clients, you know, that certainly under management have got reliable backups. Certainly, when you go into a new client or a prospect client, as happened many times before, we've seen that their backup's not worked for 6 months. So
the clients that call you in, you do the network audit, are they typical? Are they as in, I mean, they have an IT provider, they're unhappy with the IT provider, they've got no IT provider, they've got their son doing the IT support and it's outgrowing them. Can you categorize, you know, typically what their need is, or is it, you know, all different courses?
It does vary from client to client. Probably 50% of them would be, you know, they've got a friend doing their IT support that obviously doesn't do it as a full-time role, so therefore I can't get them during the business day anyway, and can only do it on weekends and evenings. That very often can be, you know, a friend or a family relative there. But we found some, certainly in the dental areas, they've used IT providers and over many, many years, and they've got such a great relationship with them as being friends. You know, they even come along to their Christmas parties. And they take 6 months before they sack that friend as their IT provider because they don't want to upset the relationship with them. But they know they need more professional IT support. So getting that across has been quite it's quite a challenge. Because you can't, you obviously don't want them to break friends with these people. But if they're not providing the service that the business needs, then, you know, hopefully they'll look at it and say, yeah, okay, good, let's get that monkey off my back now. But I'm not sure what really happens at the end of the day. But eventually, hopefully, they come across and get well looked after. And then obviously, we need to make sure that we maintain consistency with our deliverables as well. Then.
So when you go into them and you do your network audit and whatever, and the next step obviously is conversion onto your managed service plan, what's the reaction when you obviously, you know, talk to them about price and all that? Is the price an issue that, again, you know, you find you have to overcome, or do people just go, oh, thank God you're here, we don't care what it costs to get this fixed?
Yeah, you'll find the more professional savvy client will pay for other professional services. So, you know, our best client and our typical clients are the 5 to 30 users or 35 users space, and of the core market are other professional services businesses such as, you know, accounting firms, insurance brokers, financial planners, and we've certainly got a lot of dental and orthodontists now as well. They do vary. Some of the smaller businesses, you know, they will not go anything higher than the silver plan because they've never had any budgeting for IT expenditure. They've always had those spikes and putting out fires. And some can be more difficult to convert into a planned way of thinking rather than this responsive attitude. But they certainly do like the help desk that's offered with the managed service as well, because, you know, we do on-site scheduled maintenance visits, whether it's once a month, twice, or every other month or every quarter. We don't have any more frequently than that, unless they're purchasing obviously servers and PCs and that, then we get those installed during the month. But they're very good at getting their plans in place and making sure they don't get excess charges out of their normal plan amount by making sure they do order things in a timely fashion and make sure it's all planned. So we do have to train our clients to work in a more controlled environment, but they do see the benefits of it. And, you know, we've got an 8-page managed services document, which has gone through its 5th revision now. And it really does clearly highlight that if they plan for these new equipment, new installations, then it's included in the plan that we offer. So they're not going to get any shocks with any unexpected additional bills.
Okay, so turning away from that slightly, is do you have an incentive scheme, obviously, for your clients to do referrals, like a referral, a scheme to get your clients getting out there and finding you leads and converting you and all that sort of stuff? Do you have, you know, a program in place?
Yeah, we do. There's we've got the word of mouth referral. This is not just for our clients. This is for our staff as well. And we have to pay $500 to a staff member last week for referring another dentist to us that came on board last month. So, it's $500 cash we give to our clients. I think we give $2,500 away a year. So this is for clients that refer other business owners to us that sign up on a managed services plan for a 12-month period. And the minimum requirement is really a server and 5 devices, such as PCs and laptops. And that's all it is.
So specifically when you give it to a business, do you pay the business or the individual within the business who's referred that to you?
Yeah, that does mix. If it's the business owner, I'll give him the choice, but he's quite happy just having it knocked off his bill or some free labor included to the value of $500 for something that's being planned in a project for his network. Staff members, then we'll give them $500 cash.
Okay.
It's up to them then to declare it to the tax office, of course. It's not our responsibility, that side of things. So I don't think it's worth, probably if they only get one $500 a year, it's probably not worth declaring that.
And do you find that it drives more referrals, or is that just, like more a thank you fee? Is it actually, do you, publicise that fact to all your clients and all the employees and, let them know that scheme is available to them?
We do let them know. We don't have a written down plan. It's more of a face-to-face verbal that the clients know. And it's mainly our IT contacts. And we obviously make sure that they do know the type of businesses we're after. If they've been on our books for a long time anyway, they will know exactly how we operate and the type of businesses that we will look after. So, I probably could do more on the word of mouth referral to like the entire client base. So we've got 60 clients now on managed services, and some of them I don't let know because I don't want some of their types of businesses, if they're only 2 or 3 people, for instance, that we've had for many, many years, or some, you still got the occasional C type of client. Hopefully we've got rid of all our D clients now, you do want to make sure that you promote this probably more heavily with your ideal type A client on a platinum type of plan.
Obviously like attracts like, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's what you're trying to achieve. So apart from that, so you've got, cash in hand, finder's fee, bounty, whatever you want to call it. What about testimonials? Do you solicit those? Do you get those from clients? How do you stand on, getting regular testimonials from clients?
Yeah, we don't get them so regular. Maybe every couple of years we get a few, really just to update the website and business profile, and obviously for the Microsoft competency levels as well. That's obviously an important one to make sure that we're on board with that, although we've let that slip, as many of us have. The testimonials we've got on our website and our marketing materials are really, again, larger clients, not so many of the smaller ones. So it's, again, your professional advisors and insurance brokers type of clients that have had the testimonials publicised.
Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is you're not actively pursuing those at the end of each job or the end of each client, or you're just doing it, like I said, when and if is needed. Is that?
It's when, yeah, it is when and if needed when we want to refresh some material. We don't get those off every client, that's for sure. Yes, we could, I suppose, but I think you can have 60 testimonials a year, and you're only going to use 3 or 4 anyway most of the time, unless you're going to start to focus on certain verticals, which obviously is the next stage of really targeting the type of client you want.
Okay, so you've got the newspaper ads and they've worked. You've got the client bounty. You've got testimonials, which is probably not as not that active for you. Aside from that, what else have you tried, or you know, what else do you find works?
Yeah, well, we do. We were spending about $1,000 a month on search engine optimization, and this was one of the Odesk type of services. It wasn't Odesk; it was a different one. And it was probably $900 a month we were spending. It was close to 1,000. I know that, and it really wasn't getting anywhere in the end. But then we've got another. We host our website with another local company that we've referred many clients to. And now he's doing it for us for free, because as a payment for our referrals to his services. And we're coming up now higher up on the Google list, certainly for the areas, you know, the geographical areas that we want to be looking after and concentrating on.
Okay, so just on that score, because that's obviously, you know, the de facto solution which a lot of people throw at, and I've had mixed results with that as well. But in the Google Ads stuff, I mean, obviously, you're targeting a specific area, but you know, as a managed service provider, you're not doing the break fix. What sort of strategy, words, keywords do you put into that? Obviously, I would personally think is that people are looking for just an immediate fix if they're going to Google, but you know, is that drawing the right crowd, the right result?
It is. Well, we've not had people coming to us from our website only wanting a break fix solution at all. It's always clients that have done quite a bit of research. They know what they want. They want somebody, they want a business, professional IT company to look after their IT needs and offer a responsive help desk, which we do. So they generally, the client that will come to us, like I say, will have done quite a bit of research, and they might not know what the terminology managed IT services is really, because I think it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. They just know that they don't want just an immediate computer fixed right now. By the time they've gone to that stage, then they've got good knowledge in their head, the type of business they're after.
Okay, so obviously part of the importance, obviously, in the whole marketing scheme of things is your website, what it says, the information it provides, all that sort of stuff. Is that a fair statement?
It is, yeah. We've actually got five major pages that we have on there. We probably need a couple more, obviously, like most of us do, but you don't want to overcomplicate things. People need to be able to find things nice and simply. You can't all be having a website like Microsoft's never being able to find anything, although that's a bit better than it used to be.
Just be careful. Don't forget you're getting recorded.
Okay. It's better than it used to be, I said. But you know, the depth of knowledge and pages that you can come across on those websites, it's a minefield. You need Google itself, obviously, to find your way through it.
Yeah, I think they invented something called Bing to do that, to solve that problem.
Yeah, if Bing would come up as a default search provider on my systems, then yeah, I'd use it. But
right. But I think that, you know, obviously that one of the key elements is you know, the web stuff and designing it right. Now, you know, obviously designing the website is a skill in itself. In that process, you know, how involved were you? Did you say, look, we want these colors and these words and off you go and outsourced it? Or was it more hands-on?
Well, there's a lot of areas where there's different professionals in different areas. We're not marketing experts at all. We don't know how to write a good article, such as, you know, the new product release sort of thing. So we do outsource that, pay for other people's services to do that, along with the graphic design. You know, we tell our clients we will not design websites for them. And, you know, we don't stray out of things that we know we're good at. So we're quite prepared to pay for other professional services to do those things for us. And I guess that's one thing that when you're earlier in the day of developing your business, you do try and do everything yourself. And generally, we don't do it all very well. So you do have to engage in other professionals a lot more often when you want to do things properly.
Okay, so speaking of, you know, people outside, you know, the skill set that we, you know, the IT skill set we have, is that, again, how involved in that sort of, you know, area do you get? You know, understanding the marketing, understanding the sales, understanding all that sort of stuff. I mean, is it something that you give them a brief and outsource, or, you know, sort of, obviously it's your brand, it's your company, you want to keep a certain profile, but how involved have you been in that over the time period?
Well, I've obviously tried to train myself up in how to run a business. Only when I first came to Australia, I'd never run a business before in my life. So I went on a 6-month small business course, which was absolutely fantastic, just down at Carlingford. I'm not sure they still run it now, but anybody new to the game should really jump on one of those if they've never run a business before. But then I've always had business mentors as well, whether it's business coaches or friends that have run large businesses that have helped me along the way. Somebody you can bounce ideas off. Not all those ideas will work, of course. So as long as you've always got somebody got your back and kicking you up the backside, keeping you moving, then you will continue to try and develop yourself and your business. I'm probably naturally a lazy type of person. We'll take the easy way out sometimes, but if I've got that big stick hovering over my head, then I'm likely to get a move on need to be accountable to somebody. And I used to think we're accountable to all our clients, which indeed we are, but you certainly need somebody driving your business forward with you as well. And you go through many business coaches over the years, you usually outgrow them within a year to two anyway, and then move on to the next one or the next stage of your business development.
And obviously something else that I don't know if you're still involved with was obviously the HTG groups, and we've had Arlen on and done a podcast. What's your take on those as an opportunity, especially not so much on the technical, but on the business development, marketing, sales side of it? I mean,
yeah, well, with the HTG, I mean, my wife Alex was involved in the online HTG groups for one of the years, and I did the following year. So that's about 3 or 4 years ago now, 4 or 5 years ago now, in fact. That's just business coaching and mentoring, but it's targeting our specific industry. So it's so focused, it's absolutely totally valuable. I'm not involved in the HTG groups or face-to-face HTG groups now in Australia, but I might get back involved in that again. But we have many other business areas, but the general business coach is obviously very broad, whereas the HTG is specifically targeting managed services providers. So they can talk the talk; they know the business better than we do, inside out. So you get valuable information from those sort of peer group meetings.
Okay, so again, on that, in your experience, I mean, obviously the HTG is for a certain audience and a certain business size. What else could you recommend as an opportunity for perhaps those that are, smaller in size or coming up or looking to get to that next level and may not have the requirements to meet, something as specialised as HGG. I mean, what other options are available to them?
Yeah, well, I know if there's the smaller companies, I know I've had these discussions with many of our groups from the SMB IT professionals group meetings. The one-man band shows, and the ones that want to try and get into managed services, and giving guaranteed response times and help desk. And I'm of the opinion now, if you're only a one-person operator, it's pretty much impossible to give a guaranteed response time unless you're backing it up with another company that can cover that for you. So, it's a difficult one, the early adopters or smaller businesses. Certainly when you've got 3 staff, it's a lot easier. 2 is still quite difficult. We had one stage where, wasn't always guaranteed that there was somebody in the office, for instance, to answer a call. And, from 3 and a half years ago, we made that a point where, everybody's not going out and being booked out. Obviously, nowadays with VoIP phones, we make it a lot easier. The clients actually don't know where we are. We can answer the office phone from home anyway. So it gives us a lot more flexibility there. But we certainly always have somebody in the office now, 100% of the times during Monday to Friday. But as far as, the other areas of advice, certainly with marketing and getting your name and out there, you've certainly got to be doing all of these items in your marketing mix. It's not just your word of mouth referrals, your search engine optimization nowadays, your newspapers, car signage. We've even done car signage. We haven't at the moment. We did, but it blocked out the rear windows too much, so we had to take them out. So we're looking at another other avenues of trying to get signage on the cars again. we did very expensive radio advertising, which you're not going to do as an early adopter, I wouldn't have thought. It was an absolute failure for us, $16,000 on 2GB spent. And that did attract those ad hoc one-off support people, because they were obviously driving into the office to reboot their server because it had gone down again, and thought, you know, well, that's when they heard our advert and called us, of course. So that's a difficult one. Other areas which I'm obviously involved in the SMB IT professionals group is networking, and then
let's mark radio down as potentially, obviously, you know, in your case not working and maybe the wrong crowd, but let's move on to you know, the peer-to-peer stuff or the, you know, the networking. So you've got you know, stuff like, let's start off with, which I think that you've been involved with, is the traditional Chamber of Commerce, you know, the local whatever group, local businessmen's, whatever you want to call it. You've been involved in that, and how, and sort of what's the feedback from that been?
Yeah, we have. I was involved, I still am from time to time, but not a regular attendee of the local Chamber of Commerce. But there's been some splinter groups from that, which I've been more regular members of, you know, the local business networking meetings in Hornsby and locally up here in Barara. The Barara's not so good. It's more like just, you know, keeping your face out there really as an opportunity. We don't have many clients in this area up here, but certainly Hornsby, we've picked up quite a few clients in that area and a lot of referrals from them too. So, you know, having regular breakfast business meetings, say 7:30 to 8:30, are very valuable. I did do a couple of the B&I meetings. I was invited to a couple of those, but that was just impossible for me to get there every 6 o'clock every Wednesday morning, sort of thing. That was not going to happen. I managed twice.
My experience has been perhaps in the you know, I don't want to call it lower end, but in the more generic business chambers and business, you know, I mean, not so entrepreneurial, I suppose, the traditional business networking like the chamber, it was very much about everybody trying to sell their stuff to everybody else rather than it being, we share experiences, we try and help each other. It was all, seemed to me, the ones that I'd tried had been very much a sales fest.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's what I experienced with BNI and the local chamber here. And that's why the splinter groups happened, really, because it was more of just bouncing ideas off each other and not really trying to pitch any sales talk in there at all about your own business. So, you know, not forced to refer two people every month to another member.
Yeah, and I think that, again, you know, the experience I've had with those traditional chambers, which, you know, again, they seem to be people who always go there, and they do it because, you know, that's part of the, you know, rather than the thinking or having goals or whatever, and it becomes, you know, difficult sometimes to you know, again, just try and learn from other people that there seems to be this constant pitch from them to sell their business, and as you say, you get to the situation where it becomes very hard because that's not necessarily what you're after. So you do get those splinter groups, and you know, there are breakfast networking and business networking, and I mean, so your experience with that has been far more positive.
Yeah, and it certainly has, and I don't pitch ourselves as being, you know, as trying to sell our services to any of those businesses there. It's just, you know, they will eventually, if they eventually want our services or have somebody that will want our services, then we'll refer us because, you know, we see them regularly enough and they hopefully see us as professionals, otherwise they wouldn't be referring us.
So how big's that typical group, you know, the ones that are working? How many people are generally at a meeting at a time, not necessarily members of the group, but actually come to the event?
I guess it'll be 6 to 10 people, that was all. Wouldn't be too huge.
Okay, and what sort of stuff are you talking about? What, you know, I mean, if there is something typical, what's the, is it, you know, the economy is this or business is bad or that sort of, what sort of is the discussion?
The last few months, I think, well, the last one we did on last week was about, you know, the aging population. And I think they said in the next generation, for instance, Japan are going to lose a quarter of their population because they're an aging population, they're shrinking. and how that's going to affect us and how we can adapt our businesses to cope with that if it happens in Australia. Although we've probably got too many migrants coming in to shrink the population as much, and we've got room for more, I think. But the ones previous to that was, you know, what are we doing with social networking? And you know, I guess I know you and I have discussed social networking along with many other members of our group.
So
Who doesn't do it? You know, and we do it now. But it was really, you know, after these meetings, I thought, well, I'm tasked now with talking about this to these businesses. I haven't done it myself yet. Let me just try and engage in that, and then I can be more informed about using that sort of and talking about that sort of service.
Well, I do know someone that you could invite along that could help them, but not mentioning any names. So, what's your obviously, you know, perhaps your not into the social media as early as others. What's been your again experience with that? Has that been part of your mix? Is that working? Is it, I mean, what's your observations of it from, you know, your background?
Well, it does certainly work, and I would say probably the one that's worked more, and I'll go back to that Chamber of Commerce, local Chamber of Commerce, is their LinkedIn site as well. You know, just answering a quick question on there can open up a lot more of discussion, and you might be seen as an informed person on the subject, subject matter expert, for instance. But people do reach out on LinkedIn probably more for those sort of questions. I don't think Facebook is used in that kind of way. We use certainly Facebook and Twitter mainly to get urgent responses out or urgent messages out to clients if there's a massive internet failure, because the chances are, even though the internet might have failed for a certain type of internet connection, they might still be able to get a Facebook feed from a phone somewhere.
So, would it be fair to say that you're finding clients themselves are adopting, you know, the Twitter, the Facebook and that, or are you introducing that to them? Are they coming to you saying, we have this option now?
Yeah, I think since we've started using it, a lot more of our clients have been as well. I mean, yeah, we've had some that were obviously adopting it before we were. Those that have, you know, a full-time marketing or at least, you know, 3 or 4 day a week marketing staff on their books, then they're driving that side of things as well. But the smaller business that doesn't have a marketing arm probably will more often than not be a later adopter. Certainly we were, and there's still plenty that are not using this sort of social media to promote their business or even promote any messages at all. But certainly we've. Since we've done it in the last 3 months, we've seen a lot more of our clients doing a similar thing. So, you know, they're obviously following suit or not just following us, for instance, they're probably seeing many other people doing it and think it's about time they did too.
So, obviously, it's early on in the game for you with social media, and you're obviously seeing that you are getting some positive results. Are you seeing those results coming from your customer base, or are you getting, you know, external referrals or leads or things coming in from the social media?
That's probably from mostly external people, not from our current client base. Yeah, absolutely.
So how are they finding you on social media? Is it someone referring them to your tweets, or they just do a search, or they, you know, randomly come across you? I mean, you know, what do you think is driving people to your, you know, social media feeds?
Well, the Facebook ones, I mean, still building our list on Facebook anyway. I don't think many people are finding us on the Twitter connection so much. But like I said, LinkedIn, answering a question on LinkedIn is probably the one that's been the best result so far. It's difficult to, or we haven't really got measurements for any other referrals, because certainly all our referrals that we've had in the past 6 months have all come from word of mouth.
So I suppose the thing is, I would say about, you know, the LinkedIn, I totally agree with you. I think as a business network, it's the place not only to lift your profile, but these days it's also probably the place to look for partners and employees because it's, you know, being so regularly used. The other advantage, obviously, with some of the social media tools and things around, you can aggregate your Twitter into your Facebook, into your LinkedIn. So again, you do it once and it broadcasts over all these media. I think that it's a case of there's so many choices with social media, it's a matter of finding the tools to allow you to get that leverage. But once again, I think you're right that the LinkedIn certainly seems to be the way to the business to business, and you know, to an extent business to customer is growing. And really, if you haven't got a LinkedIn profile and you aren't building that and you aren't adding content into that, I think it's going to be very hard to stand out from the crowd going forward. I mean, you know, is that sort of the philosophy that you're taking, that the LinkedIn is obviously the more important thing that you want to invest time in? And the other question is it just you doing the LinkedIn stuff, or do you have your staff in there or other people in there as well?
Well, the staff are certainly involved in more of the Facebook posts, which links through to Twitter, and probably just myself for the LinkedIn at this stage. Although we've got our Facebook posts linked into the Twitter feed, we haven't linked them up to the LinkedIn one yet. Because I think I wanted that one separately, just for now anyway, and we'll see how it goes and develops. Like I said, we're quite early in this development of this messaging system. Apart from just using Facebook for personal use, it's time to now use it seriously for business use, like many people are nowadays, like you said.
Yeah, I think, again, it's... what we're seeing is obviously a change in the landscape, and Generation Y and the generations coming through, it's second nature for them to use social networking, and that's the major tool they use. So as these people obviously move into positions of responsibility and you know, those sort of things, then they can you know, be more easily you know, equated to, if you're using the tools and at least understand them. I think my experience has been is that most technology people have been very slow to adopt this new wave of you know, social media and all that stuff around it, I think. And that can give you a point of differentiation in the market. And to me, the good thing is it's basically free. It doesn't cost you to sign up and use these sort of tools.
So, well, that makes a big difference, really, because, you know, we're looking at 10 different areas in our marketing mix here that we're discussing, really. And really, social media is pretty much a free one. And like I say, we've spent $60,000 in 3 years. So, yeah, we're looking at $20,000 a year in our marketing. And, you know, with other things that we're adding onto this, and you should never really let go of any of them, because every single one of them should be being used, apart from radio for us now, of course. I don't know if we'll revisit it again down the track, but it certainly wasn't a good one the first time around. But you know, we've got other 8 or 9 areas that we're getting our message out, and some are free, some are cheaper than others. So social media, as you say, is very much a free one for getting your message and your brand out there.
Well, I think the thing that disappoints me most is that so many people, again, especially in the technology, especially in the small business side of things, tend to write it off without even thinking about it. They, you know, they look at one feed or they look at the negatives. They don't see the benefits in it. You know, and it's amazing to me that a lot of them still fall back into the thinking that we need to send brochures, you know, put brochures in post office boxes. That may work for some people, don't get me wrong, but my experience has been, in talking to others, is, again, it's a costly, time-consuming, and you can actually end up causing more harm to your business. And again, not to at least have a look at the social media or talk to other people who are using it successfully is probably a great oversight on their part. And to an extent, that's great, because obviously that gives you more benefit to managing, you know, to promoting your business rather than them. But it certainly seems to me that, you know, this is the way that it's going to be going. And if you aren't using the tools, at least in some way, you can be looked on very poorly generally. I mean, how are the other people in that business networking breakfast? Are they all into the Twitter? Are they far along with it? How are they placed?
Well, they were all given a month to actually get on board with some of it, and I think only 3 of us did in the end. So, yeah, I'm not sure they will do eventually, but you know, they need to come along to our meetings more often, and you know, we'll be their big stick in saying, "Come on, you said you were going to do it. Why haven't you done it?" Well, you know, the usual excuse, "We haven't had time," is a lame one nowadays. We've all got time to find things that we need to do. But you know, I mean, they might even be just concentrating too much in one area that they've always done and they're in the habit of doing, which obviously people, you know, we're human beings, we're difficult to break habits out of. So anything new is going to usually take a longer time for them to adopt and get used to, I think.
Well, again, I think perhaps is it was interesting. I read an article that basically said that, you know, when technology people initially got into the field, they got into it because everything was changing. You know, we had to install, you know, Windows 95, and that was all new, and we got new Pentium processors and Pentium 3s and Pentium 4s, and we're hanging out for the latest and the greatest and everything, and going through a lot more pain than we go through now, just for the sake of, you know, we had, you know, attention deficit syndrome, we had everything different all the time. Now it seems we've gone a full circle where those same people are saying, oh my God, it's, I don't want it to change. I want it to stay the same. It's, you know, I just can't handle this much change this quickly. Perhaps, you know, again, we're all getting too old to do this sort of thing, but it is interesting that it's sort of come around to that sort of, situation where the people that were, you know, at the cutting edge perhaps are now saying, oh, it's way too much for me.
Yeah, well, I think they probably just can't keep up now because the probably things are not changing any quicker than they ever have done. It's just that we slow down and other things don't around us. They carry on going.
And perhaps in another respect, you've got more to lose. You know, you've got the business is bigger. You've got more responsibilities. You've got more wages to pay. You've got, you know, got to make your payroll every month. You haven't got that flexibility to perhaps be, you know, fiddling around with the new technologies. But that said, I don't think it's something you should ignore. And I think the solution I would tell people is that you probably need to find a leader in the space, or you need to find someone who's you know, using it effectively, and basically go and tap them and buy them a cup of coffee or whatever and sit down and ask them some pertinent questions. You, at the end of the day, you may decide it's not for you, but it seems to me that part of it is a lot of people in our industry want to do things the hard way. They get, you know, great satisfaction out of solving a problem and proving, you know, understanding it from end to end. But I just don't think we have the time to do that, especially outside the fields that we have expertise in.
Yeah, I think you're right. And people tend to be stuck in their ways. Like, I guess I'm a stubborn person in that way as well. Too long to get onto the social media bandwagon and still not as far down the track as most people. But, you know, as long as you're doing many of those marketing activities, then you know it should benefit you for sure. You should always pick up your businesses.
Well, I think probably as we are sort of approaching our time and we need to be winding up, I think that would it be fair to say that you know, once you do find, I suppose the first thing is you've got to keep trying some stuff. You know, like I said, you've got to throw some stuff against the wall and see what sticks. And that may be more than just a single campaign, a single attempt. You do sort of have to stick at these things. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it's got to be consistent now. And like I said, we've gone back to the newspaper advertising ourselves. So we've been doing it for 2 months now. No leads on that one just yet. But I know it took about 2 or 3 months for the first time to start kicking off. That was a regular appearance in the newspaper. And that's the same with everything. You need just regularity of it all, really. We're even going to start going to a really old medium and buying a trailer and sticking signage on the side of it and parking it at the side of a road in business centres or business parks.
So
that's a really old traditional method.
On that, can I give you, I would give you a little bit, and everybody else, a little bit of... I suppose advice from what I've read and what I've discovered is you know what the old QR codes are?
Which one, sorry?
The QR code, you know, where you basically scan what looks like a whole lot of black dots and a little screen.
Oh, yes, yes, yep.
One of the tricks I heard was that they, exactly what you're doing, they parked a truck in a high traffic area. But what they did is they put a QR code on the trailer and said, you know, if you respond in the next day or 24 hours or whatever, you'll get a free X or a free Y or whatever. Mm. So again, the idea is that rather than just rely on people writing it down or whatever, they use the technology, which, you know, a lot of people have in their phones these days by default, to actually get that instantaneous, you know, result, to basically say, look, you need to scan this right now. Don't walk any further. And I'm beginning to see the QR codes now appear on ads, you know, on train stations and all over the place. So again, people don't have to write anything down. They can just scan the QR code and that can direct them to a website or whatever, give them a voucher and do all sorts of whiz-bang things.
Yeah, I think I've seen them in the bottom corner of some posters now on walls as well. Yeah.
So, you know, that seems to be a big trend that's now obviously started, I believe, you know, in places like Japan, but now it's picking up steam in places like the US. So something like, you know, they're talking about putting a QR code, for example, on every piece of hardware, you know, computer equipment you ship out, and that's got all the details in it. And if the technicians need to work out what it is, they just whack out their phone and QR code it, and it gives them all the information they're after. So apparently it's becoming a very powerful way to convert information into a relatively small space.
Yeah, well, it's easy to scan in now. Like you say, everybody's got a phone with a scanner in it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, there's certainly plenty of options, and there's ways to do the traditional method, but obviously give it a slightly different twist, which, again, would help you stand out from the crowd. I think that at the end of the day, you know, apart from sticking at it, I think that you would probably agree that it's an important, it's very important that you actually have some sort of measurable results. I mean, you know, my understanding is from your side of it that you have, you know, the metrics and that, and you know how much you're spending and the returns and all that sort of stuff. I mean, is that, again, a fair comment to say it's just as important to know what the results are providing?
Yeah, well, if you're not going to measure any of the results, then you're never going to know what's working and what is more effective than others. But things, you know, in a managed services business, we used to measuring absolutely everything now and recording every little bit of time spent on every client. So it shouldn't be difficult to track things like this, you know, advertising, you know, and you know, how has this person called your business? You want to make sure all your staff are trained to make sure they give the right message when they're speaking to new prospects that call. Make sure they get that information if you're not available. But yeah, if the business is in the habit of it, though, it's not a difficult one to succeed in capturing the information you need.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, as part of an overall strategy, you have to be able to look at it and say what works and doesn't. And again, you can go back and point to the newspaper advertising and say that works for you, and it may take a few months for it to work, and that gives you the confidence rather than sort of saying, well, I don't know where this is working. I don't know why this is working. So, you know, obviously that's just as important. And perhaps part of it, you know, the third part of it is you need to spend time doing it. As much as you love being a technician and whatever, at the end of the day, really the way that you're going to accelerate or grow your business or move it to the next level at a much faster rate is you do need to spend time on marketing, whether that's outsourcing to someone. But at some stage of the game, you basically do need to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've just touched on a point there, really. You know, my comfort zone is traditionally always being a technician. And you know, the past few years, I have put more of a business head on and a marketing head. So I have put myself in a more uncomfortable area than I would have been familiar with being in before. So I'm used to it now. I'd rather do business sessions than technical sessions now.
And I think part of that, too, is the way that you become more comfortable with that is obviously sharing the pain, in inverted commas, with others, whether, you know, they're within your industry or whether they're, like I said, just general business people. I think you'd be amazed at how many people that you talk to in just the business sphere that they're going through the same sort of struggles, just they're coming at it at a different angle. So again, people think that they're alone doing this. I think that there's, you know, a significant network out there, face-to-face and virtual, that can provide a lot of assistance and experience.
Yeah, well, there's no reason for any of us to be alone in this now, and there's plenty of free help and paid help available.
Well, again, and I think it's just a matter of, like I said, you know, getting involved with it, diving into it, and again, finding someone who can assist you. And again, they may, like I said, you grow out of them in a period of time and move on to the next one, but they certainly provide a stepping stone to the next level. So I think, again, the important takeaway is that in this case, as with technical assistance, it's good to build a network around you that, you know, you can ask for advice, or you can basically, you know, bounce things off. And especially for a small operator, is you're going to need to be able to do that. And the way to do that is to build your own network. And you know, LinkedIn is a perfect place to start. But again, just contacting someone you know on a regular basis and offering them to, you know, sit down with a cup of coffee now and then is probably a very good point to start.
Yep, totally agree with you. Absolutely.
All right. Well, now that we've talked about a good point to start, it's probably a good point to finish.
Yep.
I'll take this opportunity to thank Mark for giving us his time and experience and, you know, all the things that he's been able to provide us from, you know, his business and his angle. To round it off, Mark, I suppose that if people do want to get in contact with you or do want to have a look at what you are doing with your business and potentially how you're marketing that business, how can they do that?
Well, I can come along to the SMB IT professional meetings in Sydney, or many obviously the interstate people can go to their different chapter meetings as well, or you can contact me through you, Robert. That's no problem.
Okay, well, like I said, I'll put some links up there, and like I said, if people are interested, don't hesitate to contact us. And again, if you've got specific questions or things you'd like to discuss with Mark or follow up, please feel free. We can make that happen. So once again, Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. This has been another podcast from the Computer Information Agency. Thank you very much for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.